Welcome to our live stream in the trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics. And we're going to be talking about a bitter, tough pill to swallow. Defeat to the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was a very, very unusual football game. You watch enough football, you think, seen everything. Well, there were some things that took place Sunday that, wow. That was kind of a first. Honestly, the Pittsburgh Steelers were the Bengals' opponent, but they had two opponents. Cincinnati Bengals were the Cincinnati Bengals' opponent, even more so than the Pittsburgh Steelers. When you have five giveaways and no takeaways, you go minus five. Statistically, you're going to lose by NFL standards, or probably any football standards, high school, college, NFL, whatever it is. You're going to lose 95% of the time or more. You couple in the fact that one of those turnovers resulted in a defensive touchdown. When you allow a defensive touchdown or a special teams touchdown, staggering percentages of victory, probably 85% or more. So you add those two metrics. I mean, the Bengals to even be in the football game was amazing. The things that occurred to them, going to lose 99.9% of those football games. And they had a chance to win it at the end of regulation. And an overtime. And then throw in Harris. I mean, that's brutal. You lose your deep snapper who has never had a non-playable snap. It's the operation was so clean, so trustworthy. Darren Simmons, you almost start to take it for granted when you have a guy like Clark Harris deep snapping to holder Kevin Huber. And Evan McPherson kicking the football. Clark Harris on a punt, when he's covering a punt in the first half, extended his arm to make a tackle. And when he got hit, felt right away that his bicep detached from the elbow area. And he's having surgery to correct that. And he's going to be out for the year. So Cal Adomitis is the guy that's on the practice squad. The Bengals really liked him. He was the best deep snapper in college football. He's there for a reason, and they were hoping to have a little bit more time to develop him. But Darren Simmons is going to be burning the midnight oil this week, getting Cal ready for what he's going to see down there in Dallas, because Dallas likes to do a lot of things in terms of pressuring. And they've got a special teams coach that is one of the better ones in the National Football League. Obviously, here in Cincinnati, we're spoiled with Darren Simmons, who's been in the league 25 years, 20 years with the Cincinnati Bengals. John Fassel is the special teams coach for the Dallas Cowboys, and he's outstanding as well. So it's going to be a chess match between Darren Simmons and Fassel, and I'm sure he's going to come up with some unique twists and little tweaks to his pressure packages when they're on the punt return team, if in fact he does decide to pressure the punter at all. And also with extra point field goal, because we saw how pressure affected one of the extra point, Evan McPherson. It was a good snap. The snap was tolerable, no question about it. Evan McPherson strikes the ball perfectly, but blocking broke down up front. And Minkah Fitzpatrick gets his finger on the football and deflects it. No good. Extra point, no good. Would have won the game. It's right at the end of the football game. It was a walk-off win that didn't take place. And the game goes into overtime. The Bengals eventually lose the football game. So all of that is extremely important. And Darren Simmons will be officially burning the midnight oil on a day-to-day basis, getting ready to fill a big hole. And that big hole is Clark Harris and what he's done. You never know that. I shouldn't say that. You don't appreciate the value of a deep snapper until he's not there anymore. So we shall see. And you do have to admire the Bengals' fight. Down 17-3 at the half, down 14 points. Didn't come close to folding their tent. Actually marched all the way back. Played much better in the second half than he did in the first half. Joe Burrow, five turnovers, four interceptions, and a lost fumble. Four of those occurred in the first half. I thought the offensive line had their struggles in the first half. I thought it improved in the second half, and Joe's play improved in the second half as well. And usually those kind of things go hand in hand. So he got sacked 7 times, hit 11 total. That has to get cleaned up. Have to be a little bit more consistent in the running game. I think Joe Mixon's numbers tell a little bit of that story. Joe Mixon on the day, 27 carries for 82 yards, 3 yards a rush. He had a 31-yard run. So take that out of the equation. 26 carries, 51 yards, less than 2 yards a pop. So too many tackles for loss, too many times where the push wasn't good enough at the line of scrimmage. Going to have to correct that and make the offense more balanced. The JoJo show, Joe Mixon running the football, Joe Burrow throwing the football to all the various and sundry weapons that he has. Going to have to get more consistent play up front. I thought it was more consistent in the second half than the first. I remember saying on our podcast more than once that the way the offensive line hasn't worked together much during training camp and did not take a snap in the preseason, that they very well could be better at the end of September than the beginning of September, and very well could be better in the second half of the game than the first half of the game in the opener. And it was pretty much the case. So I think corrections, improvements will be made, and they've got themselves a challenge down there defensively. That front seven for Dallas has got players as well, and Micah Parsons is a player, number 11. You'll see him all over the field, and this guy's legit. He's the real stuff. 13 sacks, 20 tackles for loss, 30 quarterback hits last year in 16 starts. 12th pick of the draft out of Penn State. Game wrecker. Got to identify Micah Parsons. You can't let Micah Parsons blow the game up. Quarterback, center, everybody has to locate him, account for him. Recognition, communication, no mistakes with that guy. Trevon Diggs, 11 picks last year. That led the National Football League. It also tied the record that Everson Walls set, the Dallas Cowboys. And Dallas is a turnover machine. At least they were the year before. In 2021, 34 takeaways. What? 34 takeaways. 2 a game. First in the NFL. 26 interceptions. First in the NFL. Plus 14 turnover ratio. Tied for first in the NFL. Going to have to take care of the football. First and foremost, more important than anything else, after being -5 in your opener, going to have to win the turnover battle to compete down there on the road in Dallas at Jerry World. Let's get to some of our loyal fans, knowledgeable, loyal football fans, Dave, and we're gonna see what we got.
Start with Sixer Alex.
Okay. Sixer Alex.
Two topics, Zach's decisions, and then two, offensive line. Please don't sugarcoat any of them, Dave.
Okay, Sixer Alex, what do you want? What do you want me to say, Sixer Alex? Zach was very forthright in his press conferences. He made a mistake. He said that's on him. He's not sugarcoating anything. Real is real, Sixer Alex. So I'm trying to stay away from sugar. But what?
And we got the cookies, though.
Yeah, right.
We've been munching on those all day.
Yeah, the Buskin Bakery cookies right here. How about these? Buskin Bakery, Brian Buskin. It's a tremendous bakery right here in Cincinnati. They made these cookies. Dave Lapham in the Trenches logo, brought to you by First Star Logistics. And he delivered them to us in the studio here at First Star Logistics. So, Alex, you know, maybe Sixer Alex, you might want one of these, and then you can sugarcoat it. How's that? But Zach said he made a mistake. There's no question a mistake was made. Quick snapping the football when the ball was placed incorrectly at the 6-inch line, it was a touchdown. The NFL has verified that if it had been challenged, it would have been a touchdown. The catch that was made, good route was run. Catch was made by Jamar Chase. His foot was on the line, so his right hand, right arm with the ball was outside of his foot, so the ball had crossed the goal line as well. But Zach decided to go up tempo, no huddle, get to the line of scrimmage and try to pound in a running play from 6 inches away, and they lose 2 yards and they don't end up scoring touchdown on that particular red zone possession. And that became an issue as the game went on. Red zone snaps that weren't as productive as they should have been in the fourth quarter and overtime. The Bengals had a bunch of red zone snaps and didn't get much production out of it. So that was one. I don't know what other decisions you might be talking about, but that's one of them. Another thing that comes to mind is they snapped the football on the final punt when they decided, all right, we're not going to kick the field goal. It's you know, after the loss, the snap before fourth down, there's a problem. You can't advance. The person who fumbles the football is the only one that can advance a fumble. That's why the ball was brought back, and instead of kicking a field goal, the Bengals then had to settle for a punt. At that point in time, you're thinking could be a strong eventuality for a tie. So had 15 seconds on the play clock. Should not have broken the huddle as a punt team as quickly as they did. You have a deep snapper who is, you know, Mitchell Wilcox is like, you don't want him sitting over the football forever. Darren Simmons felt like when he was ready to snap the football, go ahead and snap the football, make sure the operation's clean there. A lot of things that they've talked about as a staff, and they've probably talked about to the players as well. And you learn by the mistakes, and some mistakes were made. Would have stayed in that huddle for a longer period of time and then come up and either take the penalty, which I'm not sure, let the clock run down. Not sure you want to stop the clock is the big thing. In a perfect world, you'd snap it with a second to go. You'd snap it with a second to go. And if Clark Harris is in the game, he's looking up at that play clock right in the corner of the end zone. And when it's down to 3-2, he snaps the football. But you're in a situation where Mitchell Wilcox, he's worried about is making sure he snaps the ball well enough to the punter. He's not going to, you know, you start trying to add variables to the equation, you know, then all of a sudden the snap might be in jeopardy. So there are a lot of things that went on down the stretch, some things, quote, mismanagement things that can be rectified, taken care of. And I hope that's not sugarcoating it, Alex.
Zachary Bailey, we're gonna carry on with this. Zachary Bailey, Lap, love your insight on the game. Should the Bengals have been more prepared? Disaster situations practice. I don't think you ever go in thinking we're gonna lose a guy who's taken every snap for years.
No, you can't go into the game with a 47-man roster with two deep snappers. you're not going to do that. Now you have to have a player on that roster, active roster, that is an emergency snapper, and the emergency snapper is Mitchell Wilcox. I mean, that's exactly that. You can't replace a snapper with one of almost equal ability until that game is over with. You know, your emergency snapper is exactly that. I mean, if you're fortunate, you might have somebody that has a little bit more experience as an emergency snapper than Mitchell Wilcox did, but he had been designated the emergency snapper from Jump Street. And, you know, they brought Cal Adamitis up from the practice squad. And that's the fact that nobody claimed him after they waived him. They were very, very excited to be able to bring him back and develop him on the practice squad. Well, it turns out to be a stroke of good luck, because now, instead of what do we do now, he was claimed. Where are we? Who are we going to be able to get somebody off the street? You have Cal Adamitis, who has been at mini camps, OTAs, training camp. He knows exactly what Darren Simmons wants. He knows the schemes. He knows the people. He knows the calls, the communication. It's about as good as the situation can be. As a matter of fact, it came down to, in the final cut, it came down to, are you going to stay with Clark Harris? Are they going to go with Cal Adamitis? Now, all of a sudden, you know, oh, geez, you know, I don't know about Cal. Well, Darren Simmons right now is getting Cal up to speed as quickly as he can. And they are spending a ton of hours together. I can tell you that this Tuesday is the player's day off. If they're injured, they have to get treatment. A lot of guys go down and lift and work out still. Cal Adamitis, I mean, he may have gotten a workout in, but the rest of the time, he's been up in Darren Simmons' office, I can guarantee you, with Darren Simmons the entire day, going through everything and anything the Dallas Cowboys have done, not just in the opener, But back to last year and years before that, I mean, they are getting him as ready as they possibly can in as quick a time as they possibly can, because another advantage that Clark Harris has as a deep snapper, 14 years in the NFL, he's seen everything known to man. He's seen every single front that a punt return team can put in front of a punt team to try to pressure. And he's been there, done that. The only way to get the experience that he has, you can't drill a hole in Cal's head and pour it in there. He has to start to experience it firsthand. And that's the big variable. So that's what Darren Simmons and Cal are working on right now.
Sounds like Dan the Man had a bad weekend. I want to skip. The reason I brought this up, he said his Cornhuskers, it tells us he's a Nebraska fan, are awful. They just fired Scott Frost. Other than that, everything's going great.
Yeah.
Here's my thing, Dan the Man. Could Zach Taylor be a guy that the Nebraska Cornhuskers go after as their head coach?
Yeah, well, they may. I'm not sure that Nebraska, I don't know what kind of money they have in the kitty, but I know Zach got a nice contract extension after taking the team to the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl 56. Yeah, I think I'd be surprised if Zach would decide to go back to college football as a head coach after coaching the team to the AFC Championship last year. I'm sure that maybe their people are calling his people, seeing if there's any level of interest. You know, you reach out, the worst you can say is, no, move on.
Yeah, well, the money being out there, you know, Brian Kelly getting $10 million a year.
That's LSU, though. I mean, I don't know if Cornhusker.
I think Nebraska's up there. I think they have the money.
Their alums have that money?
Yeah, I think it's
I don't know. I didn't notice that when I was out there doing games in Nebraska. I didn't notice all that money. Yeah,
but they're in the Big Ten now. They get about $56 million every year just from the Big Ten network.
Yeah, yeah.
But you get it. That's just the crazy thing is I've seen all these names, Urban Meyer and these other coaches, you know, at the college level. It's like, hey, here's a guy, Nebraska ties. He understands Nebraska football.
Yeah, he was a offensive player of the year when he played at Nebraska as a quarterback. So, yeah, The worst that can happen is that Nebraska reaches out and Zach and his people say, I'm content here in the National Football League. Let's put it this way. Once you decide to go to the professional ranks from the college ranks, it's very rare you end up going back. It does happen, but guys stay at college forever and never even go to the NFL. Or if they go and they find they don't like it, they go back. I don't know if Zach's in that situation. I think he's pretty content and excited with trying to do as much as he can with the Bengals in the NFL.
We always have to talk about Yash because we know he's over in England. And he talks about Drew Christmas is there in case Huber would get hurt too.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that battle all through preseason between Drew Christmas, Kevin Huber, and at the long snapper position as well. The Bengals, they look like they were super smart in being able to get, as you said, those guys on the practice squad.
Yeah, Drew Crispin, there were some changes made at the punter position across the National Football League, and teams went in a different direction than Drew Crispin. And Darren Simmons was excited to be able to get Drew Crispin back as well and develop and work with him. And the thing, obviously, that you have with Clark Harris and Kevin Huber is they are getting longer in the tooth. And the risk for injury, the older you get, you get up into your late 30s. I mean, the risk for injury when you talk to people, you know, medical people, it's exponentially higher once you start to hit a certain age. Even as specialists, I mean, they're not facing that contact on a snap by snap basis. But all it took was one play where Clark Harris, you know, got his arm in an awkward position and ends up tearing the bicep off the elbow area. You just never know. So to have specialists like that in reserve, that's a good thing to do. Good thing to have.
Dolores Cole's always with us. We appreciate her being here on In the Trenches. You always say if you win the turnover battle, you win the game.
That's a truism. I mean, it's an old saying. It's not 100% true, but man, let's put it this way. If you go plus five and you don't win the football game, that's what almost happened to the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's what's unbelievable. They almost went plus five, and if the extra point isn't blocked, they lose the football game going plus five. Honestly, Pittsburgh should have won that game by 3 scores or more. Pittsburgh's not really a dominant football team. You go +5 and you're holding on for dear life to win the football game. They're going to have their struggles. Offensively, they're not a juggernaut. It's just a true fact based on that football game. It's incredible. You look at the game Minkah Fitzpatrick had, 14 tackles, 10 unassisted. He on his takeaway, on his interception, he scores. He scores 6 points for his football team. The offense doesn't score it. He scores it for the defense. He puts the first points on the board. And then he prevents points going on the board for the Bengals to win the game. He was involved in 7 points, 6 for his team, took one away from the Bengals that they should have had. That is a massive day. Plus the fact that he got away with knocking T. Higgins out of the game with an illegal hit that wasn't flagged. And, you know, that was huge because T. Higgins didn't play in the second half. All those red zone snaps that the Bengals had, if T. Higgins is in the game as another red zone threat, as another red zone weapon, with that size that he has and his ability to box people out and catch the football, who wouldn't have wanted to have T. Higgins out there running routes in the red zone down the stretch? So Minkah Fitzpatrick did a lot of things that affected the outcome of the football game. There's no question about it. And he gets hit helmet to helmet right there. Three guys, Minkah Fitzpatrick. It wasn't like the hit went from the shoulder pad up to the helmet. It was a direct shot to the head, head-to-head, direct shot, you know, targeting as such, even if it's not targeting. Head-to-head is a penalty. Helmet-to-helmet's a penalty. If they've deemed that it's targeting, you can get kicked out of the football game at the collegiate level, you know, and there's fines. I'm going to be interested to hear if Minkah Fitzpatrick gets any kind of fine from the National Football League for that hit. Because he wasn't penalized, that doesn't mean that he can't be fined. It'll be interesting to see as this week goes on.
Homer Simpson talked about that. Also, he talks about the T.J. Watt crackback block on Joe Burrow on the interception.
You know, I mean, crackback blocks, they're legal. I mean, it's not that you can't crack back anymore. I mean, wide receivers crack back on T.J. Watt all the time. Tight ends and wide outs can go in motion and crack on him.
But it kind of looked like he instead of going and hitting Karras, he could have, and he went and found Joe.
They're taught to do that. I mean, we had drills, turnover drills, defensive players. First thing they do is look for the quarterback. And if you can hit him, you hit him. That's the nature of the beast. And as offensive players, you try to protect your quarterback in that turnover situation, fumble, interception, or whatever. Quarterbacks are vulnerable. And people do look them up. That's part of the nature of the beast in the NFL as well. I would say, though, that the league is trying everything they possibly can to make sure that there are not pot shots taken on quarterbacks, because they know that quarterbacks are the reason people are tuning in to the record numbers that they're tuning into in terms of viewership. And if you let quarterbacks start getting picked off left and right, that's going to hurt those ratings, and the NFL is all about the big money. It's a gorilla. It's a marketing gorilla, 500-pound marketing gorilla.
Disco Potato Dave, what do you think of the empty backfield formations on first down and short yardage? Seems like it gives opposing defenses the advantage not having to worry about a run.
Well, you know, the thing is, though, if you spread it out, and if you're totally empty, you don't have to worry about a run. The only thing you have to worry about is a quarterback draw. And but, you know, that you can motion people back into the formation. You can do a few things, not stay empty. But yeah, I mean, empty backfield is foreign to me. I don't think I ever ran a snap when I played. Of course, I played quite a while ago now. It's been more than a minute, but empty, totally empty. If we had gone totally empty, or teams had gone totally empty, we would have thought the coordinators' heads were totally empty. It wasn't even thought about back then. It was crazy.
Rick Hay, I just hope Joe doesn't get so tired of being sacked so often he doesn't listen to Carson and Bolt.
Well, I mean, Joe's not going to, I think if the Cincinnati Bengals offer the money that I think they're about to offer, I don't think Joe's going to be bolting anywhere. You know, I think there's a mutual level of respect there, and But you do want to take care of your quarterback. There's no doubt about that. And he is getting hit too much. But Carson Palmer.
We had Boomer on last week.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing Boomer said, if you didn't watch that video, go back and watch it, was the Brown family has always taken care of their quarterbacks.
Yeah. Oh, Mike Brown played quarterback. Mike Brown played quarterback at Brown, and he was pretty good. Paul Brown played quarterback at Miami of Ohio. So the Brown family understands the importance of the quarterback position. Paul Brown surrounded himself with the likes of Otto Graham. He drafted Greg Cook, who tragically, you know, his career was ended prematurely. He was a physical marvel, a physical specimen. And yet Kenny Anderson, I mean, and they've always taken care of their quarterbacks. They realize the importance of the position. In their mind, it is the most important position in all sports. And Boomer Esiason was the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League when he got his contract with the Cincinnati Bengals. And Mike Brown took care of Boomer Esiason more than once, brought him back, as a matter of fact. The mutual level of respect was so high. So I do not think that Joe Burrow is necessarily going to be going anywhere. We'll see how it shakes down. But I think they're prepared to open the Brinks truck for Joe Burrow. And I think Joe's smart enough to realize that if you go overboard and there's not enough to satisfy other people that you need to be able to perform, you know, you have to take that into consideration as well. So it's going to be interesting how that whole dynamic, that whole negotiation unfolds, really.
We'll go back to Dan the Man Lap. How tough is it to bounce back from such a costly loss where you know you not only could have won, but absolutely should have won? And kind of a teaser, we had a current Bengal. We asked that question. I mean, you want to make sure you see our one-on-one interview with DJ Reader later this week. And he talks about that. You asked that question to him.
Yeah, well, and I can speak from experience. Let me give you some examples here. All right. This is this question I thought might be coming up during the course of the week. I'll go back to Super Bowl 23, 1988. Cincinnati Bengals are 6-0. They go to New England. Boomer Esiason throws 5 interceptions. 5. Not 4, like Joe did. 5. Most in his career. They lose to the Patriots, now 6-1. They bounce back. They end up going 12-4. They end up going to the Super Bowl. So Boomer Esiason wasn't going to let one bad game derail his MVP season. He not only bounced back, he won MVP that year. There's a good example. So I'll go to the Super Bowl season that I played in 1981. October 11th, we beat Baltimore 41-19. October 18th, we beat Pittsburgh 34-7. So now we're 5-2. Forrest Gregg's our head coach. 5-2. Thinking, man, here we go. We're on a nice little roll. The following week, October 25th, we go down to New Orleans. Bum Phillips is the head coach. And it's when it was the New Orleans Aints. People were wearing bags on their heads. Archie Manning was quarterbacking. George Rogers rushed for 113 yards against us. We stunk the joint out. We couldn't get out of our own way. We lose 17-7 to a team that was 1-6 when we went down there. We're 5-2. Now they're 2-6. We're 5-3. Forrest Gregg says, look, we're 5-3 halfway through the season. You go 5-3 in the second half of the season, 10-6, you get a shot. You know, just keep playing football. Instead of going nuts on us, he basically reasoned with us and said, you know, we came off back-to-back losing seasons. Let's, first of all, win 8 games. Guarantee the fact that you're not going to experience another losing season. So what do? After that type of advice, we go out and beat Houston 34-21 by 13 points. Beat San Diego in San Diego 40-17, beat them by 23. And we were going to play them in the Freezer Bowl that year as well. We beat the San Diego Chargers twice that year, in the regular season and the postseason. Beat the LA Rams 24-10, beat them by 14. Beat Denver 38-21, beat them by 17. Beat Cleveland 41-21, beat them by 20. So we beat teams in the November to November calendar year that year, 5 games in the month of November. We sweep them, score an average of 35-plus points a game. That's how we responded to a 17-7 defeat in New Orleans to a team we had no business losing to. Can remember an opener the Bengals had not too long ago. I guess it was a little bit of time ago now. But they're winning the football game against the Denver Broncos by a point here in Cincinnati. Leon Hall goes to make a defensive play on a football, and instead of it falling to the ground, it goes airborne. It gets deflected. Denver receiver grabs it, goes 87 yards for a touchdown. Still the longest touchdown in the final minute of a football game to win the game in NFL history. It was in the final seconds of the game. The Bengals, instead of a 7-6 win, they lose the football game. This is the opener on a freak play. They turn around. Marvin Lewis, the head coach, they turn around, straighten themselves out, go to the playoffs. So you can't let one football game define you. Did it work out the way you wanted it to? No. It was a home division game. Big football game. Even as poorly as you played, you had a chance to win the football game at the end of regulation and in overtime. You didn't. You can't let one bad game turn into two or three in a row. You have to end it right there. Wipe the slate clean. Move on. No, it didn't. We self-destructed. We're not going to self-destruct again. We're a good football team. That one got away from us. Let's move on a week-by-week basis, see what we can get done.
I'm looking for, I have a couple plays here, Dave. I want to see if I can find the one I want. Let's see if this is it. That's the one miss.
That was the high snap. Hubert had to almost stand up to grab it. That's the extra point that was blocked. Minka Fitzpatrick untouched. You know, you block, you know, Drew Sample, you tried to ricochet block. It's a combination. Drew Sample and Hakeem Adeniji on that end of the line of scrimmage did not secure it well enough for the extra point to be converted. And it's a shame because the operation, if you get a snap to the, if you from snap to hold 1.2 to 1.5 seconds, that's plenty good. And I think that was in that range somewhere. It wasn't the 1.2, but it was in the 1.5 range probably. And so the snap wasn't the problem. Evan McPherson hit it pure. He said he stroked the thing. Darren Simmons said he nailed it. Minka Fitzpatrick, because of a problem up front, gets a finger on the football and deflects it. So now, if you're Evan McPherson, extra point is blocked, and it's due to what's going on up front. Your 29-yard field goal attempt, your holder, Kevin Huber, has to stand up almost. He has to rise up to catch a high snap and get it down for placement. Can't spin the laces out of the way. So you have to, you know, you're kicking into the laces, and that's not that big a deal, but it's bothersome to kickers. You miss that. So now it's like, my protection's not very good. A snap is, how do I approach this ball? I mean, do I change my rhythm? Do I slow down? What do I do? Because on the high snap, Evan McPherson was at the ball before the ball got placed, and that's hard on a kicker. But Darren Simmons said that Evan's got to make it. And Evan said, I can make it left-footed. I have to make it. You make the adjustments. But, man, like to have those situations back. There's no two ways about it. But, again, you have to move on, learn from your mistakes, correct your mistakes, and don't make the same mistake again. That's for sure.
I brought that up. Dan, the man, basically his question was basically technique-wise, where the outside man blocked outside instead of blocking Fitzpatrick on the inside, you block inside out on extra points, correct?
Yeah, you ricochet block if you've got two out there, because, you know, and then if the tackle can help a little bit, like Hakeem Adeniji might have been able to do on that. But by rule, you always block inside out. You don't block outside in. Same thing in protecting your quarterback. You always block inside out. You don't block outside in. You don't block edge rushers and allow a blitzer in the A-gap between the center and guard to just come right up the football field and smoke your quarterback. So everything has to go. And ricochet block technique, it's been done for years. I mean, ever since I've been around football, when you have a couple of guys, the wing back, the last man on the field goal team, will have to do what's called the technique of ricochet. You hit the inside rusher and then ricochet out to the outside rusher. You don't block either of them totally, but you definitely hit them, reroute them. You don't allow them a free, clear path to block the kick like Minkah Fitzpatrick was allowed. He was not rerouted whatsoever. I'm not sure how much he was touched. So it was an error. It was an error made up front by more than one person, according to Darren Simmons. And the two people that stands to reason had the issue, Adeniji and Drew Sample. And unfortunately, Minkah Fitzpatrick took advantage of technique and assignment error there a little bit.
Dave, Sixer Alex back. He was kind of wanting to know, do you feel maybe fans could be a little too harsh on Cordell Volson? The fact that, you know, Hayward maybe brought all of our excitement about what he did in the preseason, brought it back to planet Earth.
Well, you got to remember that this defensive front that the Steelers put out there, TJ Watt's out. It's going to be still to be determined. He's getting second and third opinions if he has to have surgery on his torn pec. He has a torn pectoral muscle. Now, if he has surgery, he's out for the year. If he doesn't, he's out 6 to 8 weeks. But when TJ Watt is at full bore, he's defensive player of the year. Cam Hayward, five straight Pro Bowls. That's who the rookie was going up against. Your welcome to the NFL happened on the first snap. Cam Hayward got a sack. It was like, you think, all right, I played in some preseason games. In fact, I played a whole preseason game. They had me take every snap in a preseason game. But what was the level of competition you're going against in the preseason? And there's preseason speed, regular season speed and tempo, and postseason playing speed and tempo. And Volson was introduced very, very quickly. It was a welcome to the NFL moment when Cam Hayward came off the ball like he did in regular season NFL tempo, being a 5-straight-year Pro Bowl player. We're not talking about just a Jimmy and Joe. We're talking about a stud. And Volson quickly adjusted. And, you're going to take your lumps. You're going to learn your lesson. You're going to make mistakes. Don't make the same mistake twice and keep ramping up your level of play. I think he's going to be all right. I think he's going to be okay. I've seen Cam Hayward take apart really good lineman in the National Football League. Cam Hayward can play. Point blank.
That brings us to the question of Quentin Spain. Should the Bengals relook at Quentin Spain as that left guard spot still is developing?
Well, I think, let's put it this way. What team is Quentin Spain on right now in the National Football League? Where is Quentin Spain? Quentin Spain was watching the game on a couch just like everybody else was. That's, in this podcast. So it's not just the Cincinnati Bengals. It's a league-wide decision that Quentin Spain, is not necessarily the guy to have on the roster at this point in time. So I don't know. I mean, that decision is above my pay grade. I'm just a color analyst. I'm not a scout. I'm not a personnel director or whatever. Now, do I think Quentin Spain is a big, strong, thick bull? Yeah. We can show you tape, though, in the Super Bowl, the last play of the Super Bowl, where Quentin Spain, Aaron Donald, that's a great defensive player, too. Didn't work out that well, and Joe Burrow gets spun around, and, Quentin Spain doesn't lay much contact on Aaron Donald at a key time when they were sliding the line that way, and just his technique wasn't what it should have been. So everybody gets beaten. I don't care. Even the great players, the greatest players in the league, everybody has bad plays. Everybody has bad games. The question is, what do you do about it? How do you rebound? How do you respond? If you start stringing together too many bad plays and bad games, your career is thanks for participating. Here's your plane ticket out of here. It's over.
King of the Foothills, what's your opinion of running the ball from under center versus running out of shotgun?
I mean, I've seen both work. I think it's based on what you want to do schematically offensively to fit your personnel best. The thing that you don't want to do is every time you're under center, you're running the football. Every time you're in shotgun, you're throwing the football. You don't want to be that obvious with your tell and your keys and, you know, and all that sort of thing. You have to have a pretty good mix, potentially, you know, in both. And that's what you try to avoid. One thing that you do when during the bye week, most teams in the NFL, they run scouting reports on themselves to see if they are having tendencies in terms of formations, plays run out of specific formations. If there's, okay, every time they're in this formation, they're running, you know, off tackle. Every time they're in this formation, they're running the ball wide. Every time they're in this formation, they're throwing the football. Every time they're in this formation, they're play action passing. If you've got tendencies like that, they're gonna be broken quickly.
We want to remind everybody to make sure they go to In the Trenches on our YouTube channel. Hit the like button, please. Hit the subscribe button if you're not a subscriber, so you know when things like this happen, sometimes just out of the blue when we come in the studio and we're scheduling things out. And we always have to thank First Star Logistics for the facilities we get to use every week and everything they do for both Dave and myself. So, but can't say enough about First Star Logistics, can we, Dave?
No, I mean, if without them, we're not here. Obviously, it's their game. This is their studio. This is their show, basically. I mean, they are the podcast.
They provide all the tools we need.
Everything, whatever it is, they provide it. And if they feel like in their mind it can be better, they're going to make it better, and they're going to figure out a way to make it better. It's a heck of a situation. It's a unique environment to work in, that's for sure. It's very, very positive. And if you're a young guy out there that is looking to make a serious dime, you should check out First Star Logistics, because you know you can be a logistical account executive that will determine where freight's going all over the country, and you make a nice living, you make nice commissions, and you're part of a team. And First Star Logistics is all about team. Dave and I can attest to that.
Yeah, we're gonna have some exciting news sooner than later, I think, with our studio. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see.
We'll see.
We know it's coming. It's just a matter of when.
That's right.
And everything looks very exciting, to say the least. Cody Y, as a former offensive lineman, are you concerned with the amount of sacks Joe Burrow took with the Bengals' new offensive line?
Yes. And the Bengals' new offensive line is concerned about it too. Seven sacks is too many. And being hit, having your quarterback hit 11 times is too many. Now, was it all on the offensive line? No, never is. If there's a three-step drop and the quarterback's supposed to get the ball out of his hand on the third step and he doesn't, and he holds on to the football and he starts looking too long for too many things and he gets hit and sacked, that's not on the offensive line. But if it's a pocket pass where you know you're supposed to give him 3 to 5 seconds to throw the football and you don't, it's on you. If a back who's supposed to pick up a blitz and he doesn't, and then an offensive lineman's trying to do two things at once, that's on the running back. If it's a free runner that was supposed to be picked up by somebody other than the offensive line, that's not on the offensive line. If it's free runner because of the scheme and they brought one more than the offense could block because schematically they put everybody out in routes, that's not on anybody, but it's a scheme issue, and it's basically on the coaches. One defensive play caller called a perfect play against an offensive play that didn't have enough people to take care of blitzers. In those situations, you have hot reads. If the quarterback doesn't execute the hot read, holds onto the football, and a free runner sacks him, you know. So it's never just, oh, sacks, man, offensive line. There's always multiple reasons for sacks. But did the offensive line block well enough on a snap-by-snap basis? Hell no. And they'll be the first one to tell you. So everybody can get better. Coaching, players, you name it. Everything can improve. If you think you've arrived, you're always sadly mistaken, because somebody's always there to knock you down that ladder quite a few rungs, believe me.
Tom Brooks, Dave, says, why are D linemen getting hands up and batting down balls so frequently? What can the linemen do? We talked about that before we even did all this today. One, TJ Watt's just a special player.
Yeah, TJ.
And that way, that the particular play, the interception especially, he just had perfect position to do what he did.
TJ Watt and JJ Watt, the Watt brothers, did this, both have done this against the Bengals. TJ Watt just did it in the last game. JJ Watt did it in a playoff game for the Houston Texans against the Bengals, where he picked off Andy Dalton at the line of scrimmage and returned it for a touchdown. So that was even more difficult to swallow. When it was in a playoff game, a defensive score from a pass rusher. TJ Watt, the thing is, you have to give your, you have to take a little separation in your set, because TJ Watt is so explosive and so quick. So you have to play a little bit of an angle there. And if you set too short, set too flat, he's got you beaten on the edge. So now you're set back a little bit and you're giving him a little bit of space. And you want to, you know, counter that first move he's going to make. He's reading Joe Burrow's eyes. He comes off the line of scrimmage. Instead of blowing up the field, he chokes it down, jumps because he sees Joe Burrow. That, now, if Joe Burrow were pump faking, TJ Watt is like a parachutist without a parachute. You know, he's sailing down to earth and, you know, nothing is accomplished. But in this particular play, and you've seen it happen, guys get pump faked. Linemen will leave their feet and join the parachute club. But this one, TJ Watt took a chance. He read Joe's eyes, took a chance, went airborne, and he's got a big vertical. I mean, he got off the ground really well. He's an unbelievably explosive athlete, 252 pounds, and he can take on big, huge linemen and stuff them. I mean, he's got unbelievable strength in his lower body and all through his body. He goes airborne, and he's like a ninja with his reaction and his eye-hand coordination. For him to catch that football at the RPMs that it's coming out of Joe's hand when he's airborne like that, and to control it and intercept it instead of, you know, hitting it and falling to the ground or whatever the case may be. To make an interception on that play is rare. That's not something that happens on a regular basis. The only alternative you have is you've got a jumper like that. And Tiger Johnson, my first line coach that I had, he said, you know, if you got a jumper, man, make him pay. Get close enough where as soon as he leaves his feet, chop those legs out from under him and make him fall on his head. Make it uncomfortable for him. If you chop him, take him to the ground, I'll guarantee you he ain't going to be jumping that much anymore if he jumps at all. And that was a good technique. But these guys now on the edge like that, TJ's so skilled, it's hard to put yourself that close to him when he decides to go airborne, you know, that he feels safe. And that he's not going to get his legs chopped out from under him. So he's a problem. There's no doubt about it. And the Pittsburgh Steelers defense without TJ Watt, that's a different defensive football team. I mean, TJ Watt, Cam Hayward, to have two studs like that, one on the inside, one on the edge, that's pretty special. And it's going to have a much different look without TJ Watt out there. Alex Highsmith on the other edge. This guy got three sacks. He had three of the seven sacks. Alex Highsmith, TJ Watt had a sack. He had one of them. He also had that interception that was incredible. I mean, those guys combined to be a pain in the side to the Bengals offensively. There ain't no doubt.
Yeah, and going on that play, watching that play, you see Watts far enough out to where the tight end was actually almost like a little bit of a chip. I think it was Hurst, kind of dipped his head and shoulder, didn't chip as much as I thought he should have. And that just left such a big gap between him and Collins that where it just allowed TJ to kind of do what he wants. Because there's no way Collins could have reached, even with his long arms.
Yeah,
he could have reached.
But it might have been a situation where Hurst was told not to chip. Maybe he's supposed to avoid him and get in his route quicker. You know, if you chip, because it was a quick pass. So if you get a tight end chip and he's one of your primary receivers and he's chipping, now that whole thing's mistimed. So we don't know what everybody's assignment is and all that goes along with it. So Hurst was, you know, he might have been, because if he's trying to get out of the way, you know, maybe he's supposed to try to release off of that tight end or not get tied up into the tight end, you know, on a slow block, maybe just nudge him or whatever. We don't know what the assignment was, what the technique was, and it's all part of football.
Les, hello. Definitely Joe was not right, and I feel that medical episode had everything to do with it. Bigger issue, Zach has to challenge that touchdown. That was a touchdown, friends.
Yeah, it was. No doubt, Les. And the league confirmed it. Zach's fully aware of it, that it was a touchdown. And if you – the first replay that came up on the scoreboard, it didn't look like it was a touchdown. the angle of the replay did not go right down the goal line, and it did not look like it was a touchdown. So you have to take a little bit more time, let the network come up with all the camera angle shots that they're going to feed. And the booth has a replay designated person, that's their responsibility to look at the replays and to communicate with Zach. Don't challenge it, challenge it. By the time they got to all those other replays, Bengals had already gotten to the line of scrimmage and quick snapped the football. Again, hindsight's always 20/20. Zach said, that's on me. Something that close, probably should have let it, should have slowed the whole thing down and let the process take place. But the very first replay that came up was not conclusive that it was a score. So that's part of the learning experience. And you don't make the same mistake twice, just like players. Coaches don't want to make the same mistake twice as well.
We're going to go to Andrew, who's asking about the Bengals' new long snapper. What do you know about him? What can you tell us about him?
All I know is that he's the best long snapper in college football last year. He's not as big as Clark Harris. Clark Harris is like 250-plus pounds. Clark Harris came out as a tight end, and he wasn't going to necessarily make it in the league as a tight end, so he had talent to deep snap, so he went in that regard. He went in that area. I think Cal's at least 20 pounds lighter than Clark Harris, and I know he's a lot shorter. So he's not as big a bodied guy in there in terms of blocking. The one thing that, you're allowed to snap and release right away in college football, not in the National Football League. So there's some different things. We'll see how good a blocker he is. That's the one thing that Clark Harris, in my mind, provided. He was one of the, not only a great snapper in terms of accuracy and velocity, he's a big bodied guy. It was a pretty darn good blocker. And I think we'll see how well Cal covers, what kind of foot speed he has and all those kind of things. He's going to be, baptism is going to be under fire here pretty darn soon. There's no question about it. The Dallas Cowboys will be challenging Cal.
I'm trying to clean up the board here a little bit, Dave.
All righty.
All right. Ben Riley. Lap, can you explain cover two is difficult to manage? What should a QB do?
Cover two is you have two safeties deep, and they're very deep, 15 yards deep. And basically the thought process on cover two is to take away the outside receivers. And, the Pittsburgh Steelers felt like got to do something with Jamar Chase and T. Higgins and all those. We're going to play some cover two, some soft shell, cover two. So cover two. A good area to attack it is with a tight end in the middle of the field, or if the corners aren't playing real, usually sometimes with cover two, the corners are up in a press position. Sometimes they're off. Pittsburgh was off quite a bit. So Joe Burrow was very, very patient with his cover two. You saw tight ends, Hayden Hurst catching the ball on the perimeter, toward the outside the numbers, toward the sideline. You saw running backs. Remember the quick throw to Joe Mixon that he almost exploded and broke tackle. Did the same thing with Samaje Perine, the quick hitter to Samaje Perine where he almost broke it. So you've got safeties are working their way outside. Linebackers are running in the middle of the football field between the hash marks. They've got receivers, up the middle of the field. That's the area of weakness potentially if you can get there against cover two. And the Bengals started attacking it pretty well. Basically what they're saying is you're not going to go deep on us. We're taking away, the outside deep stuff. And the Bengals started to be very, very patient with not trying to force the ball deep. I think they're going to see a lot of it because Joe Burrow made as many or more big deep throw plays last year than any quarterback in the National Football League. That was a big emphasis and proven for the Bengals last year. They got it done. So now offseason defensive coordinators, and Joe has said it, coaches have said it, going to see a lot of cover two. And Pittsburgh gave him a heavy dose of cover two with those two safeties deep. The thing you have to be able to do, if you're going to keep two safeties back and not load the box, you got to run them out of cover two. You got to start gashing them between the tackles, running the football, and make them drop a safety down to put another body in the box to be able to control that running game. And that's not what happened on a consistent enough basis. The Bengals did not have a sound enough running game to run them out of cover two. And the Pittsburgh Steelers continued to feel comfortable keeping two safeties back instead of having to bring one down into the box, almost like another linebacker.
619 Bengals fan. Hey, Dave, do you think Burrow is staring down Chase too much? He should get his other receivers more involved. I thought he didn't look at Chase enough.
16 targets, quite a bit. 16 of them, and he caught 10. He caught 10 balls. The problem is T. Higgins was out for half of the game. So, you know, if you're Joe Burrow and one of your guys that you're going to be relying on isn't there anymore, and Mike Thomas caught a two-point conversion. Mike Thomas played well. He had a big play on that two-point conversion. There's no question about that. But, man, Ja'Marr Chase is one of those guys. You just never know when he's going to break one. The fun starts after he catches the football. And like I said, he had 16 targets, 10 catches, 129 yards, and a touchdown. And should have been two touchdowns. Another one that the league said was a touchdown was not credited with. But when you have a special talent like that, the thing with him is his body is so damn strong. I mean, he has got unbelievable contact balance. He has as good a contact balance. I mean, when he gets hit, he doesn't go to the ground real easily. Contact balance is most running backs in the National Football League. His lower body is as thick and powerful as most running backs in the National Football League. This guy is unique and special. He can power clean 330 pounds. Wide out. Power clean at 330. Squats ridiculous numbers. This dude is strong. This dude's a physical force, man. He's a special player.
Richard says, I still believe Olsen will be pretty damn good. It'll take time, and you're right. Steelers D-line had two monsters on. I talked to my brother after the game, and I asked him about Volson. He's like, he goes, man, he goes, that reminds me of my first college start, and I looked up, and some guy named Dwight Freeney was over top of me,
yeah,
and happened to try to think of all the things he was going to do. And he goes, just so much goes through your head, especially being, can't imagine what would be like your first NFL start.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my, one of the first games I played in, first preseason game. It was Miami Dolphins, Manny Fernandez, Nick Bonacani. I'm watching these guys for a while. They went undefeated last year. They went 17-0 and won the Super Bowl. What the hell am I doing out here playing against these guys? I wanted my autograph book to get their autographs. Cleveland Browns had Jerry Shirk and Walter Johnson. I mean, they had a tandem at defensive tackle. Pittsburgh Steelers, all they had was Joe Green and Ernie Fats Holmes, and Jack Lambert inside. You come up to the line of scrimmage, it's like, man, it's the big show. These guys are good, and it's no joke. These guys are really good. Now you're going to get yourself tested. Like I said, lesson learned. Welcome to the National Football League. Now you know exactly how powerful, how quick, how everything these guys can be. And you have to make some adjustments in your technique accordingly. Things you used to be able to do and get away with because they weren't that gifted and talent on the other side of the line of scrimmage, you can't do it anymore. You're going to have to do things differently to get these guys blocked. And the only way you're going to be able to determine what needs to be done and how it needs to be done is to go through it, is to experience it. Baptism under fire. And Olsen was officially baptized. He is now, he's got his ashes. He's now in the National Football League.
Hey, don't worry about being late. We're glad you're here. After Sunday, do you think Zach changes his preseason views and plays starters next year?
That'll be an interesting question. He did exactly what he was exposed to with the LA Rams. And, the LA Rams and Sean McVay, they were undefeated in preseason and in regular season openers. Sean McVay, for the first time by losing the opener this year, it's the first time he's under 500 as a head coach. First time he's under 500. Come on, man. So it has worked in the past. They didn't look very good in their season opener either. I mean, they got handled. And the Bengals, obviously had their issues. The turnovers, I mean, I don't think anything would have been different with Joe Burrow because of the appendectomy. He couldn't have played any snaps. You couldn't have handled Joe Burrow's situation any differently. And honestly, the Pittsburgh Steelers changed some things in coverages. They did a pretty good job. Joe said after the game, they had a good game plan. Translation, in my mind, is you had Terrell Austin, the defensive coordinator, basically made a few changes, how he was going to cover people and how he was going to cover route combinations. And I think there were some people in spots that Joe really didn't think they were going to be in. And then also you couple in the fact that not only sacks and hits, but how many times was there pressure where can you see clearly down the football field? Is your vision totally unobstructed? No. So sometimes you don't see guys the way you want to see guys. All of it, in a perfect world, you want to give your quarterback room to see. You want the center and guards to keep the depth of the pocket so the quarterback has room to look and room to step up. And you want the safeties, to the tackles, to be safe in keeping the width of the pocket for the quarterback. Got to keep working toward that goal.
All right. Cecil wants to know, Lap, is it true back in the day you once saw Terry Bradshaw throw a ball the length of the field in warmups?
I did. I was doing a game with NBC, and it was in Pittsburgh, and Terry Bradshaw came out and threw the ball, you know, I'm not kidding you. It was 80, 85 yards. And I thought it was goal line to goal line. I'm like, did I see what I think I just saw? Whew. And the amazing thing about it too, is it wasn't like a big parabola. It wasn't hanging there. He threw a rope. I mean, it was not that far. It had some height to it, but not what you would think to cover all that distance. This guy had a hose, man. Terry Bradshaw had a rocket hanging on off that right shoulder. He could fire the pill. And I talked to, I played with Lynn Swann in the Senior Bowl, and Lynn Swann was MVP of the Senior Bowl. He won the Senior Bowl for us, and I loved him because back then, you got paid $750 if you lost and $1,500 if you won. So Lynn Swann, he gives us the game-winning touchdown catch at the end of the game. And I was like, Lynn, man, that's awesome. You got us all another $750. But he said that Terry Bradshaw would dislocate your fingers, man. That ball would come in there, and it'd be like he'd just pop fingers on you. That guy could throw the football. He had some tight RPMs. When the ball is spinning that much, it ends up putting a cross. When it hits guys in the chest, there's like a cross on them. You know, there's a cross on the football, you know, where the pigskin, all the panels come together. They form a little cross at the end, when you get hit, Terry Bradshaw leaves a little mark, a little cross in your chest if you haven't caught the football before it hits that skin.
Dave, it's hard to believe we have been over an hour already. So let's kind of go through here real quick and kind of clean this up and get out of here.
Got it.
Ben Riley, Lap, do you think no huddle is a direction we could go in, or was Sunday just a more unusual situation?
Oh, I think they're gonna go no huddle. It won't be a steady diet. It won't be like Sam Weish in 1988 with Boomer Esiason. It won't be steady no huddle situation. Kelly doing the same thing with the Buffalo Bills after Marv Levy complained about it with Sam. He adopted it with Jim Kelly and went no huddle. They'll mix it up, though. They'll mix up, you know, no huddle, you know, change the tempo. That's something that you can change, and you minimize defensive substitutions with that. So you want to control. You want to make the defense counterpunch you. You don't want the defense to dictate to you what you're going to do offensively. And there's, you know, you can try to control the defense by personnel, substitutions, formations, all that. And no huddle is part of that process.
619 Bengals fan back. Hey, Dave, do you think Callahan will ever get involved in play calling? And if he's not, what's he doing there?
I mean, there's a lot of offensive coordinators in the league now that are not, quote, play callers. And what he's doing is putting together the entire game plan. I mean, Zach Taylor has got all kinds of responsibilities as a head football coach that are not just putting together an offensive game plan as a coordinator. So Brian Callahan puts the whole thing together. Now, Zach has input. All the coaches have input. But Brian Callahan is the one that makes final decisions, assimilates it all. He puts together the actual game plan. And then there's a lot of responsibility there, a lot of work there. Brian Callahan is highly regarded by Zach Taylor, and his input and his contributions on a snap-by-snap basis are held in high regard, believe me. Brian Callahan has a big role, big responsibility in the outcome of the offensive football team during the course of the game. There's no question about it.
Again, we want to thank everybody for being with us during this live stream. We want to thank, again, Buskin Bakery for the cookies, yeah, man. They're awesome. Not good for the waistline, but they were awesome.
These are good now. Check it out. That's it. It's there. It is. It's a little some shade of blue and black trim around it. Dave Lapham in the Trenches logo. Brought to you by First R Logistics. And the thing that amazed me, Brian Buskin himself of Buskin Bakery delivers these bad boys here at First R Logistics. But I'm gonna take a couple of them down to DJ Reader. We talked about at the end of the podcast, not breaking bread, breaking Buskin Bakery cookies together. How about that?
Yes, yes, please. Yas just said, basically, he says when he gets in Cincinnati, he wants to go find the cookies.
There you go.
He wants to know if they're eggless. I can't answer that. I don't know.
I can't give you a definite answer on that either, Yas, but I know one thing. They're good, Yas. They're good.
Again, everybody, we appreciate you being with us. Please, again, hit the like button for the videos, multiple videos. The more likes we get on a video, the more it gets into the YouTube algorithm. Same thing, if you're not subscribed to the channel yet, please do so. That helps us grow it. Now, I want to see us grow. We've had a great little over a year and a half going on our second year come next April. We thank everybody who's been helping us grow this channel, but we want to take it to new heights. We want to double it over the next 12 months.
That'd be good. That's a good goal. Dan the Man just said he wants cookies emailed to him. How about that?
I tell you,
take care, Dan the Man.
Yeah. I mean, I think Buskins does a great job of shipping stuff out.
Sure.
So you may have to request for the In the Trenches cookies.
Right.
So, and they have the stuff to make them, as we showed you here.
And cookies is just one of their products. I mean, Buskin Bakery, they got it all, and it's all good.
So, again, we would appreciate everything First Star Logistics does for us. If you are looking for a new career, check out First Star Logistics at firststarlogistics.com. Dave, I'll let you finish it off and send us home for the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's all about team. Now the Bengals find out what kind of team they are. Game didn't go the way they wanted it to go, and they get nobody to blame but themselves. They realize that. They self-destructed. So, as a team, you win together, you lose together, you make adjustments together. That's what happens here at First Star Logistics, too, with their team. So everything's all about team and teamwork. And honestly, don't give up on this football team. They didn't give up on the game. It was not going well, going very poorly at 17-3. Took it to overtime. Could have won it. Didn't happen. Don't give up on them. When they get things straightened out, I think they're going to be something to be reckoned with. We'll see how it unfolds.
Until next time, for Dave, I'm Dave Burke. Thanks again, and go Bengals.
At First Star Logistics, we're a very strict company that really puts the pressure on our employees. Brakes? What are those?
That's what I'm talking about, Icky. Get the body right, then the mind's right. You know,
gotta get that body right.
That's right. Yes,
sir. Become a star with a chance to earn the highest commission percentages in the industry as a freight broker agent. Check out firststarlogistics.com.